This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, and welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, sitting in for Yahya Swahib, and here's what's coming up.
Because they did not even take any money, they did not take anything, so you can't say maybe it was a planned robbery or planned what. It's just they walked in and actually shot randomly.
That was Hizikele Nkosi Malabane, the Minister for Community Safety in South Africa's Gauteng province, where unidentified gunmen opened fire in a tavern, killing at least 15 people. We'll have all this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Tavern owners in South Africa are asking the government and police for protection after a spate of mass shootings at bars around the country this weekend. In the worst incident, gunmen opened fire on patrons in a tavern in Soweto, south of Johannesburg, on Saturday night, killing 15 people and wounding 9 others, 3 of them critically. There were also tavern shootings in KwaZulu-Natal province and on the East Rand near Johannesburg, bringing the total number of fatalities to 21. Darren Taylor reports.
Police Commissioner for Gauteng Province, Elias Mawela, says the crime scene at Mdlalose Tavern in Soweto is one of the worst he's witnessed in his 3 decades as a police officer.
When you see how the bodies are piled up there, you could see that every one of those people were struggling to get out of the tavern there. It was so difficult for them. These people, they were enjoying themselves here. Yeah? So all of a sudden, they heard some gunshots. High-caliber firearm was used, and it was shooting randomly. So for now, we don't have the details, what is the motive. But as investigation progresses, we are hoping that we'll get more information as to what is the motive. Why targeting this?
Gauteng Minister for Community Safety, Sizakele Nkosi Malabane, arrived on the scene shortly after midnight. She says 13 people were already dead, mostly inside the bar.
Others actually died here on the corners, so the various corners here of the township, because their friends were trying to actually carry them, either getting help for them, because as we know, ambulances don't work at night. You'll call an ambulance, go as a goose, while waiting for that ambulance. So they were trying to assist one another.
Nkosi Malubane says state security officials met in Soweto on Friday night, promising a crackdown on local criminal gangs and to rid the township of illegal firearms. Like others in the area, she wonders if one of the gangs perpetrated the tavern atrocity in response to this.
Unprovoked, as they came in here and shot at the people, because they did not even take any money, they did not take anything. So you can't say maybe it was a planned robbery or planned what. It's just they walked in and actually shot randomly, a massacre, really. And this is
Nkosi Malobane describes Gauteng, which includes the big cities of Johannesburg and Pretoria, as a war zone awash with firearms. She says the tavern shooters escaped in a Toyota Quantum minibus, otherwise known as a combi. Such vehicles are commonly used as taxis in South Africa.
So these combis are starting to be a problem. Everywhere in various communities you will hear Quantum. We now want to work closely with the taxi association to say they must have a database of who are all these quantum owners in Gauteng, and why are these quantums all of a sudden being used to actually commit crime here in Gauteng? Because these men don't travel 1 month. They come in a kumbi, go into a place, terrorize.
Liquor Traders Association representative Lucky Ntemane says tavern shootings are now so common in South Africa that they only make the news when the death toll's particularly high.
This is a very worrying pattern that we are seeing, where our patrons and liquor traders are being targeted, it will seem. We do not know where to turn to, because taverns are social spaces where people come to enjoy themselves, you know, to entertain themselves. And now it will seem that our patrons are becoming sitting ducks for people to come and just shoot them.
Ntemane says township taverns can't afford armed security guards, and the police can't be expected to patrol the vicinity of every bar in the country. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
explosions rocked the West African nation of Togo today, with one killing seven children and injuring two others. Authorities are investigating the incidents to confirm the nature of the explosions in the northern Savanes region, which has been under a state of emergency for almost a month. Matteo Ficini Kofi reports from Togo's capital, Lomé.
Togo's army says it is investigating after the blast in the country's north Tone prefecture on Saturday night. Togo's radio television Moto Ag reported all the victims were children and blamed the explosion on an improvised explosive device. Togo's military on Sunday confirmed seven people were killed in a blast, but gave no details on their ages or what caused the explosion. Some reports coming out of Togo said there were two blasts. Michel Douty is an independent security expert working with Togo's Interministerial Committee for the Prevention and Fight Against Violent Extremism.
Les explosions sont confirmées.
The explosions are confirmed, he says, but the nature of the explosions is not yet confirmed. Tome Prefecture is in Togo's Savanes region on the border with Burkina Faso, where fighting with Islamist militants spilled over the border in May. Al-Qaeda-affiliated militants killed 8 Togolese soldiers and wounded 13 in Togo's first casualties in the conflict. Togo's government in June declared a state of emergency in the northern region. Matteo Fraschini Coffi for VOA News, Lomé, Togo.
A daughter of former Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos said she requested an autopsy because he died last week in what she calls suspicious circumstances, and she's resisting plans to bury him in Angola. A Barcelona court spokesperson said the postmortem was authorized Friday, the day of his death. No results are available yet. Dos Santos, who ruled Angola between 1979 and 2017, had lived in Barcelona since April of 2019. The 79-year-old was taken to hospital and placed in intensive care after suffering a cardiac arrest on June 23rd. His 44-year-old daughter, Cheze, whose full name is Welterwichia dos Santos, demanded the hospital retain his body until an appropriate autopsy is carried out. She also has filed a legal case in Spain against Ana Paula, dos Santos's widow, and his personal physician for what she called attempted murder. Cheze also argues that her father wanted to be buried privately in Spain and not in Angola in a state funeral, which could favor the current government in the former Portuguese colony. Activists in Nigeria have condemned the death sentences given by an Islamic court to three men for homosexual acts. The ruling in Nigeria's northern state of Bauchi was the latest in a series of controversial death sentences by Sharia courts. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria. Officials say a Nigerian commuter boat that violated a ban on night movements capsized, killing all 17 people on board. The boat set sail on Friday evening from Lagos. 13 bodies were found on Sunday, adding to the four recovered the previous day. The agency had said the boat had been carrying 16 passengers, including children and the captain. Overcrowding and poor maintenance of boats is responsible for most accidents on Nigerian waterways. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. The security situation in the Democratic Republic of the Congo remains tense, despite high-level talks in Luanda last week. The summit brought together Presidents Félix Tshisekedi and Paul Kagame in an effort mediated by Angolan President João Lourenço. From Goma, reporter Zanem Neti-Zaidi says many in the DRC are disappointed that the meeting has not brought change on the ground.
A few days after the meeting, clashes are still being reported in the territory of Rutshuru in the eastern DRC. Shomo Sendugu is among the displaced people who fled their homes a few days ago after the Luanda meeting. He tells me that the clashes between the Congolese army and the M23 rebels caused him to flee. He tells me that after they left, they meet many other displaced people at the accommodation site where some of them have nowhere to sleep. He is disappointed that there has been no change since President Kagame and Tshisekedi met. Nyonzima Shema also fled as the Luanda summit was underway. Nyonzima found refuge in a more or less stable place. He tells me that he left his village and all of his belongings when he heard the crackling of bullets. He saw loyalist army soldiers fleeing and was afraid the rebels would meet him in his village and would not harm him. The situation continues to worsen despite the meeting made to restore confidence between Kinshasa and Kigali. The Luanda mini-summit was also intended to de-escalate tensions in the region. Civil society is also disappointed that no change is visible on the ground. Its president in Rutshuru territory criticized the optimistic statements issued in Luanda.
Condamnant fermement cette reprise en cause des hostilités par la M23 ce matin.
He tells me that he strongly condemns the continuation of attacks by the M23 in the locality of Kanyabusoro, even though the two presidents met in Luanda and declared a cessation of hostilities and the withdrawal of the M23 from Congolese soil. He tells me that the war is creating a lot of damage and death. There are people wandering in the streets with no place to go, with nothing to eat, and there are women who are raped. Many other members of civil society seem to be unanimous in saying that the Congolese army should be given more resources to end the war. For the activists, the path of dialogue has been meaningless. Zanem Netizaidi Ngoma for VOA News.
That was Zanem Netizaidi from Goma. Activists in Nigeria have condemned the death sentences given by an Islamic court to three men for homosexual acts. The ruling in Nigeria's northern state of Bauchi was the latest in a series of controversial death sentences by Sharia courts. Timothy Obiezu has this report from Abuja, Nigeria.
In a ruling last week, Judge Monkailu Sabuningi sentenced three men to death by stoning on charges of homosexuality. The men are ages 20, 30, and 70 and were arrested on June 14. They were not represented in court by a lawyer before pleading guilty to the charges against them. The ruling has sparked criticism from LGBTQ and human rights activists. One activist, Kayode Somtochukwu Ani, says he fears the sentencing could trigger mob action against homosexuals in northern Nigeria.
We have this cross-dressers bill introduced in April, and now we are having three people sentenced to death by stoning in 2022. It's getting out of hand. The fear that northern LGBT people have to live in at this moment.
Ani, who heads the Queer Union for Economic and Social Transformation, Quest, says activists have been unable to reach the men and help them appeal the case. They have 30 days from the day of the sentencing to do so. Nigeria's northern Bauchi state is one of 12 where Sharia law is honored. But state authorities must approve the death sentence before the men are executed. Government spokesperson Mukhtar Gidado did not respond to requests for comment on the case, but a local journalist speaking on condition of anonymity told VOA that authorities have been avoiding the topic. He also says media organizations in the north will not report the subject.
Because of religion and culture, that one is a no-go area. Even the state government will be very, very careful regarding that issue because of election is coming and anything that will be their image, they will be careful.
In 2020, a Sharia court in Kano State issued a death sentence, this time to a Nigerian singer found guilty of blasphemy. The defendant has asked an appeal court to overrule the decision and declare the Sharia court ruling unconstitutional. Lakin Akintola, head of the advocacy group Muslim Rights Concerns, says even though Sharia is not widely accepted elsewhere in Nigeria, he supports the Bauchi court's ruling.
Why don't you allow the Muslims to live their lives? If others want to continue to destroy civilization, they are free to do so. But for crying out loud, allow the Muslims to live as Muslims.
Another activist, lawyer Martin Obono, is calling for restraint.
Nigeria is a secular state and people have the freedom to express themselves. I think essentially we need to go back to the drawing board and revisit the laws, and also that will help us to create a society of tolerance.
In Nigeria, homosexuality is widely viewed as a Western import. Nigerian law punishes gay relationships by up to 14 years imprisonment. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Whoa. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
A senior Somali official has dismissed Israeli media reports that Somalia will seek to establish diplomatic relations with the Jewish state. Mohamed Desain reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
A senior Somali government official on Monday told VOA that reports it was seeking to normalize diplomatic relations with Israel were not true. A Times of Israel report on Saturday cited Israeli Channel 12 News and Can News quoting a spokesperson for Somali president. He reportedly said Somalia's government was set to consult parliament on the issue. Speaking to VOA on the condition of anonymity, the Somali official added the reports were a deliberate attempt to confuse the Somali public and baseless. Israeli media has a history of spreading lies since the Abraham Accords were signed, he said. The Abraham Accords is a U.S.-sponsored 2020 deal between the United Arab Emirates and Israel to normalize relations. It is also cited as a collective term for U.S. brokered normalization deals that followed with Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan. Somalia, almost entirely Sunni Muslim, has never had diplomatic relations with Israel or recognized it as a country. The media reports didn't stop some Somalis and former Somali officials from welcoming the prospect of normalized relations with Israel. Abdisalam Guled is a former senior National Intelligence and Security Agency official. He posted Sunday on Twitter that he didn't see any reasons why Somalia shouldn't be part of the Abraham Accords if it was in the national interest. The Times of Israel reported that Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud met secretly with former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in 2016 to discuss relations while serving his first term in office. It also quoted a Somali diplomat close to the president as saying his return to power was a positive development for the normalization process. Somali government neither confirmed nor denied any meeting with Israeli officials. Mohamed Dysene for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including Russia's aggression against Ukraine is high on the agenda as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken meets with other foreign ministers from the Group of 20 this week in Bali, Indonesia. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The United Nations said today that the world's population is expected to reach 8 billion on November 15th, with India surpassing China as the most populous country on Earth in 2023. Secretary General Antonio Guterres said that overall population milestone is a reminder of our shared responsibility to care for our planet and a moment to reflect on where we still fall short of our commitments to one another, end quote. The forecast by the UN Department of Economic and Social Affairs said the world's population is growing at its slowest pace since 1950. It should hit 8.5 billion in 2030 and 9.7 billion in 2050, peaking at around 10.4 billion people in the 2080s, before steadying at that level until 2100. The report said while a net drop in birth rates is observed in several developing countries, more than half of the rise forecast in the world's population in the coming decades will be concentrated in 8 countries. 5 are in Africa: the Democratic Republic of Congo, Egypt, Ethiopia, Nigeria, and Tanzania. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam. To curb rampant illegal logging and protect critically endangered African rosewood, Gambia has banned all exports of timber. Conservationists, however, remain skeptical if the ban will be enforced, as Annika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar, Senegal.
Rosewood is one of the world's most trafficked wildlife commodities, fueled largely by high demand from China, where the wood is used to make high-end antique-style furniture. The trade runs rampant throughout West Africa, where forests have been decimated and soil degraded. Between 2017 and 2022, China imported more than 3 million tons of rosewood, worth at least $2 billion from West Africa, according to the Environmental Investigation Agency, an international NGO. In addition to prohibiting all timber exports, Gambia has also revoked all export licenses. Haider El Ali is Senegal's former environment minister and the former director of the country's reforestation agency. He says Gambia has banned rosewood exports in the past, but the laws were seldom enforced. He says that every time the wood depots empty, they say they'll prohibit exports because in reality there's no wood left to export. And afterwards, once the traffickers refill the depots, they restart exports. Rosewood trafficking will only end once the last tree has been cut, he says. El Ali acknowledges that this time around may be different. Gambia's latest ban comes 1 month after the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, known as CITES, suspended all international trade of rosewood from West Africa. The decision applies to all 184 member states of the convention, including China. Raphael Edu is the Africa Program Manager for the Environmental Investigation Agency and Benin's former environment minister.
That is one of the strengths, the power of CITES decision, that the importer and the exporter have to comply. So even we may have some hesitation from the Gambia, we know that now there is no way to escape this decision.
Although Gambia's rosewood stocks are nearly extinct, the country continues to be a top exporter. Logs are transported primarily from Senegal's Casamance region, where the illegal trade funds a violent separatist movement. Sadi Gassama is director of Amnesty International Senegal. He says due to this rebellion, the state's water and forestry services, which combat illegal logging, no longer want to enter the forests of Casamance. And due to their absence, rosewood trafficking has also fed the rebellion, he adds. Separatist rebels also collect taxes on exported logs, according to local reports. Thousands have died since the conflict between the government and the separatists began in 1982, and a flare-up in March displaced thousands. The conflict is one of the oldest in Africa. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
And that's it for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America. We'll be right back.